Bien sûr. I'm going to try not to be repetitive. The Bein HaMetzarim, the 3 weeks, is a very broad and rich topic to discuss. We began discussing it last week. We'll continue discussing it now. Bezos Hashem, we'll get back to Chavis Alvavis in due time, but things like this is Chavis Alvavis put into practice. It's halacha lemaisa. 3 weeks is the time of year when you most sense. We always know that when it comes to the different times of the year, so this at the simple level, you're told what to do and you do it. Matzah, Shabbos, Sukkot, you can have a fully rounded experience based on doing the things you were told to do. And very often that itself connects you to the feelings behind it, etc. We're given many instructions, practical, hands-on instructions, how to take advantage. What we're supposed to be doing at each of the different times of the year. Many details. And you can get a full Yom Tov by simply following the instructions. Even if you're not, we always discuss, and there's always that agenda to try to connect as deeply as you can to what's behind it. But when it comes to Bein HaMetzarim, this is that time of year where it's just so clear, obvious, that without connecting to what's going on behind it, the instructions are really not what's going on. You fast at the beginning, you fast at the end. In general, Tanesim are a hard time to connect to if we don't really apply our minds to it. So as we started discussing last week, there's definitely a call here to step up our connection a notch. Now, I want to approach this week's discussion from a different angle. Again, I'm keeping track of exactly what I said and what I didn't say, so you'll bear with me. I think that we mentioned last week, and I want to approach it from another angle, that this is a time of very, very great potential Kirvas Hashem. If we utilize it right, if we connect to it right. Last week we said in a basic way, and that's really the core of it all, that Avelus obviously is a function of love. There's no such thing. I think we said that last week. That Avelus is a function of love, which really means that the whole business of the 3 weeks is based on the premise of Avas Hashem. And therefore, we might turn it around and say that the call of the 3 weeks is to bring out the Avas Hashem from inside us. Right? We discussed. I'm just touching briefly. That's my habit, right? On what we did discuss last time, 2 weeks ago. I apologize, by the way. I did say we were going to have a shiur next week and then canceled at the last minute. The plan was to have a shiur, and then I found myself sick. Okay. But back to the point. How each Yom Tov has its deeper message, which is really a regular ingredient of our Yiddishkeit, right? Emunah on Pesach, Bitachon on Sukkos, Tshuva on Yom Kippur, Malchus Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, Torah on Shavuos, etc. And the major feature of our Yiddishkeit that is supposed to find its expression in the Bein HaMetzarim is the Ahava. Ahava is where longing comes from, and that we already understand. That's what this period is about. It's about longing. Avelus also is a function of Ava. So the call is not, hey, go straight to mourning. Again, suddenly tell a person, hey, you may never have realized it, but you actually had a brother that you never knew about. Great person. I hate to break it to you, but he died yesterday. And you never knew the man, but be devastated because you lost a wonderful brother. You can't go straight to Avelus. Obviously, Avelus is a function of Ava, and therefore we come back to the understanding that this is very much the call of the 3 weeks. I want to add another point, just to round this out. And that is the Kirvas Hashem that is lying in potential of these times, at these times, at these weeks. Distance, on the one hand, separates between loved ones, right? On the other hand, you know the famous expression, right? Distance makes the heart grow fonder. So the truth is that there's a lot of depth to that. That when loved ones are separated from each other, and they're apart, and now they're not having the day-to-day of everyday life creates a situation where you're living in very close quarters with people that you love dearly, but either you just caught up in technicalities or in the everyday minor frictions, and you know, a few weeks can go by and you forget about the fact that you love them. It's there, right? It's always there, but it's not at the forefront. And what often can chas v'shalom end up happening, and this does happen, that as time goes on, very, very close family members can start forgetting that they love each other. And problems start developing, and they need help bringing it back out, right? And then, when they're separated before they come, it reaches that stage, okay? Then, there's just that feeling of fondness and longing. And this is really part of what Hashem was trying to do here. And it's the understanding that by pulling away when Hashem saw it necessary, that's what was going on actually. That's Mamish what was going on as the state of affairs when we had the Beis HaMikdash was deteriorating. What was going on was that the Ashras HaShechina was a given, right? And human nature was human nature, although it really meant something very different than it means in our time. We have to understand that. We can't really fathom the reality that they were living in those days, and therefore we can't really fathom the mentality, the mindset, the psyche of people living in that reality. But human nature was human nature in the sense that it was something they were living with all the time. It was demanding at times, and then at more frequent times, as things continue to deteriorate, it was mamish like a demanding relationship where there's a lot of love, but the demands start wearing down those senses of love, and more turns into right, nuisance and losing track of the wonderful things that are actually going on all the time. This is what caused the situation where the only way to repair the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael was the Churban. There had to be a certain jolt, a certain shocking step that was taken. And all of a sudden, the Jews at that time realized what they had lost, what they had been living with all the time, what was taken for granted. And now it was all about bringing it back by longing for it. Hashem basically said, there's no point in us living so closely together if we don't feel close and if we're just drifting apart from each other. And therefore, Hashem took a very painful step, which he himself expressed as oiloi la'av, you know, woe is to the father whose children are not at his table anymore. This is kiviyachol the experience that he's going, he's going through kiviyachol a million times, but that is how it is. And you know, people sometimes ask the question, we're begging Hashem to restore the Shechina to Tzion because we're supposed to hurt over his glory that's being trampled. So we're begging Hashem to stand up for himself. He can do it. Like we're begging Hashem to come back because we're hurting over his Tzar Kiviyachol. So he could do it. What's the problem? Well, we all understand that would be pointless, because why did he withdraw? He withdrew because of the fact that we weren't interested. So if Hashem brings himself back and we're still not interested, what did we gain? And therefore, it can only work if it's really Klal Yisrael appreciating that, longing for it, and begging Hashem to come back. We do want you back. We do want to be back together with you. We told it here. Someone just you can point the finger if I told this, and certainly if I told it three times already. But you know, the Maisa with the Beis HaLevi and the Chofetz Chaim, the Beis HaLevi, the Soloveitchik and Brisk are synonymous, right? But actually didn't start there. The Soloveitchik dynasty started in a city called Slutsk. And had that Rabbanus gone well, the father of the Soloveitchik dynasty, the Beis HaLevi, his first Rabbanus position was in Slutsk. Had that gone well, it's hard to imagine an Olam HaTorah where Brisk and Soloveitchik aren't intertwined, right? But we would have had, you know, Brisk was some town that had Chashev Rabbanim at some point, and then there was the Soloveitchiks from Slutsk. But the Rabbanus there did not work well. There's a lot of interesting stories as to what was going on there. I think we actually talked about it at the beginning of Shara Bitachon when we talked about the need for a person to operate without taking people's opinions into account. But Lamaisa, the Rabbanus in Slutsk did not work out well. The Beis HaLevi ended up leaving Slutsk, and with a resolve not to assume a rabbinic position again. And no, he was finished. He was done with the Rabbanus. Then Brisk, which was a very great Torah center, had always had very esteemed Rabbanim. The Bach was a Rav in Brisk, the Charlotte Diskin. And the position became open. As I'm going through each sentence, I'm resisting the urge to start getting into stories connected to each juncture. But the Rabbanos in Brisk became open, and they knew that one of the superlative Gedolei Adar was sitting available without any position. They sent a delegation to the Beis HaLevi asking him to assume the Rabbanus of Brisk. And he refused. He had made a decision. He's not going into Rabbanus anymore. He tried. He had it. That's it. And they sent more, and they tried to pressure him from all angles. And anybody who read a little bit about the Beis HaLevi knows that this was not the type of person you could pressure. He made a decision. He was sticking with it. He was not going to assume a position of Rabbanus. And a whole delegation was by him trying for the last time to persuade him. And they gave up. And they're leaving. And then one of them turned around. One of the people of the delegation turned, as they're on their way out, turned around and said to the Beis HaLevi, he said, "Rebbe, do you appreciate the fact that there are 50,000 Yidden just sitting and waiting for you to arrive?" That did it. And the Beis HaLevi heard that. He like got a certain started, and he said, "Okay, fine. That I can't say no to." He became the Rav of Brisk, and the rest was history. So, years later, when the Chofetz Chaim heard that story, he started crying. And he said, if the Beis HaLevi couldn't say no and he was told that there were 50,000 Yidden waiting for him, what about Hashem? What about Mashiach? Right? They would know that there were so many Yidden just sitting and waiting and longing. So just what's the problem? The longing isn't really there. So this is the question. This is the call. And Yavitz, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, makes this point in his Sefer Bes Yaakov. He says that, in his opinion, what is the primary chait? What is the primary obstacle that's holding back the geula? That's holding back the arrival of Mashiach? That's holding back the Shekhinah from being restored to us? Is the very fact that we're not interested enough in it, that we're not awaiting it strongly enough? Question.
This conversation came up yesterday. And you're saying that Hashem had to make that separation. But that's good only for the generation that knows it and will be chopped. And it's so many thousands of years later, nobody can realize, like my friend was saying, you know, to know the woman, she goes, she doesn't know why everybody's saying this. She you know, like somebody was saying, I am so depressed. I guess she lost her cane. She get just, you know, like, I'm not depressed. I know we have to like cry and petition her, but she goes, and this lady's like, you know, she's a learned person. It's like, what purpose is really Hashem getting? You know, of course, nobody can yearn for it that much anymore. The first generation or the first two generations.
Yes. Okay, good. So you're bringing out the classic struggle with connecting to the to Em and Noyim. And the truth is that everything I've been saying now is almost like, I've been trying to bring it out in a stronger way, but it's almost like the standard speech. Let's bang ourselves over the head over the fact that we're not longing for something that we don't have, that we don't connect to, we don't know what it is. So the truth is that on the one hand, you're right in the sense that that's the challenge, but let's not stop there. And this is really what we want to be doing here. We've identified the challenge. Good, but it doesn't stop there.
The first two generations, okay, we have the separation. You were saying the mushroom, like that has to be separate. So after that, Hashem could have brought it back together.
People
cried for Mashiach because of the tzaras, not because of the good that was there.
That's our subject. That's exactly our subject. This is where we're headed. But the point is, you're asking a good question, but it has to be a question and not a statement, meaning it can't be the end of the discussion. The question is, so how do we find the means of, what is it that Hashem wants? That's part, and I'm breaking a question into two parts. What is it that Hashem wants, and how can we find the means of connecting to that? Okay, so what is it that Hashem wants? So yes, why didn't Hashem bring it back after two generations? Well, it comes back to what we were discussing. Were the people holding there? We said that didn't depend on Hashem deciding to bring it back, but it depended on, were the people longing for it enough? Apparently, the answer was no. Now, so if so, what's expected of us? That's the good question. And this is really where we're headed. And that's what we want to discuss.
How could they not have wanted it? After the whole Korban being destroyed by the Goyim and being beaten up and whatever was happening with them?
It's not just
like going to the generation after the Holocaust. Of course they wanted it, right? Like,
okay.
Even when they came to being by shame, not everybody wanted to come back. Right.
That's right.
A small percentage
came back then. And we have to also stress that it's not just about, Hashem, this hurts. I don't like having my house burnt down and seeing people killed. So therefore, I would like to be reunited with you. Hashem, one minute. That's not exactly what we're talking about. That can be an impetus to getting to the real thing, right? It's true. Today, many of us weep because of the tzaras, and we should start from there. But what we're really heading for is the next stage. And that's really the demand of the galus. Are we working hard enough to be presentable to Hashem? Are we putting in the efforts we need to do to, for Hashem to be able to say, you have to realize that being in close proximity with Hashem is not just about saying, hey, I want it because then, you know, we'll have all the nisim that we had in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. There's a lot of work needed. Being in close proximity with Hashem was a demanding business. And that was part of why there were the failings that there were. They weren't bad people. We have to realize that. But there were very, very high demands. Living with Hashem in close quarters, this is very important to understand when we're talking about the Dor HaMidbar, when we're talking about the Dor of the Shoftim, when we're talking about the Dor of the Beis HaMikdash, and we look in the Navi and we see how they're being blasted all the time, and we say, oh wow, what a lousy bunch they are. If we have to work back into that reality and appreciate what kind of demands it put on people. But you know what? Also that, I don't want to get into that right now because I do want to actually cut straight to our point of what Lamaisa is expected of us. So the basic point that's expected of us is what we really discussed 2 weeks ago. That's the basic answer. The basic answer is Avas Hashem. It's true, we can't, it's very, very hard to mourn not having a reality that we never had. But we can appreciate the fact, if we've ever experienced a sense of closeness to Hashem, and we've all experienced that to some level or the other, some more than others, and all of us at some times more than others, but the understanding that Hashem loves us more intensely than any love we've ever experienced, and that He wants to be much closer to us. And the question is, can we appreciate that and just bring out in ourselves, forget about missing the time of the Beis HaMikdash when we never experienced it. We're talking about what's behind that. What's behind that is the knowledge that Hashem, kiveyachol, is pained over the fact that He's not as close with me as He wants to be. And the question is, can I bring out in myself a little bit of a mutual feeling of the knowledge that there's so much more closeness that could be. Hashem could be much more intimately open in my life, and Hashem wants to be. And am I capable of feeling that and saying, Hashem, I want it too? Or do I say, Hashem, you know, life is pretty decent enough as it is. If you just resolve a couple of different issues, I don't really need the closeness. That's the question. That is the question. And when we talk about the tzaras awakening us to long for the Beis HaMikdash, it's true, on a superficial level, we could just leave it as, you know, I don't want this problem, I don't want that problem, so Hashem, would you please bring the Shekhinah back? But the real challenge is, and you know what, if a person is capable of doing that, that is already on a much better track than most people, to be able to really bring it all together and say, the problem is not this, and this, but the problem is that Hashem is kiviyachol keeping himself back, and that's why these things are happening, and to want it because of that. If we can do that and long for the Shekhinah because of that, we've already reached a good place. But we want to get that step further and say, these tzaras are happening because of the fact that really, this is not the world that Hashem intended for us. The world that Hashem intended for us is a world where He is in our lives in a much more open, close way. It's when I walk through the day, all the different areas of my life, I feel Him operating with me in an open, tangible way. And if I work hard enough, I can even experience Nevuah. Right? We discussed last time how, according to my very rough cheshbon, there was a Navi in every couple of buildings. We're talking about today's reality. And take a step back. And you know what? I'm kind of going to abruptly go in a little bit of a different direction, but to get back to the same point. This is a class, you know, let's just take a deep breath for a minute and then come back to this point, but from a different angle. It's a classic question. All the Rishonim ask, many of the Rishonim ask the question, why does the Torah not describe, when it talks about schar, va'einesh, reward and punishment, it talks in terms of material blessing and material suffering, right? A lot of plenty, there'll be peace, you'll be victorious over your enemies, you'll be well, you'll be prosperous. Why doesn't the Torah talk about Olam Haba? Right? Classic question that's asked by many of the Mefarshim and the Rishonim. And many of the Mefarshim and Rishonim give their different answers. The Kuzari gives an answer that, how's Mishalom? I'm not coming, I'm not going to grade the answers of the Rishonim Chalila, but I'll just say, as the little person here being hit by this answer, hit by this answer, hit by this answer, and whenever I'm dealing with the words of the Rishonim, you know, they're over our heads, and therefore whatever Siyata Dishmaya we have in connecting, that's what we got out of it. The Siyata Dishmaya that I had most with was the answer of the Kuzari, which really hit me in a very, very great way. He says the following. He says, you know why Hashem didn't describe Olam Haba? It's because we don't really appreciate the significance of what's actually being said in the Torah. The Torah is telling you that you don't need to die in order to really experience Olam Haba. You can experience it here in this world. We have a Beis HaMikdash. We have the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael. Hashem is giving you a recipe to experience Him in a way that already gave you a taste of Olam Haba. The ultimate of that is Nevuah. If you look at the descriptions of quite what it took to work toward Nevuah, and then, but you have to appreciate, Nevuah was not a technicality of Hashem says, I have a message, I need somebody to give it over. Oh, Yeshayahu looks like the right person to give over my message. There's a clear text that's handed over, and you go and convey that on. Being approached by Hashem in such a way was an experience of entering Olam Haba in this world. It was an experience of entering Olam Haba. It was an experience of an intensity that none of us have ever experienced anything like that, to the extent that the Kuzari says that after a person had the experience of Nevuah, he was no longer capable of enjoying anything material. today, when we talk about not enjoying things that are material, we're talking tzidkus. We're talking being austere, right? But that's not what the Kuzari is talking about. The Kuzari is talking about when you have that shras hashchina and spiritual and physical pleasures were just intertwined. It was an experience of such unbelievable bliss that our bodies today don't have the capacity to handle. That afterwards, anything you experienced after that was like, ugh, it's not. If you experienced that, he says the only thing that your focus in life since then, oh, yeah, shukoyach, pretty cool. Does the heating work? Shukoyach. The only thing you would be thinking is, can I ever get to such an experience again? You eat the best foods and it's like, can I get another nevuah? You go through the best experiences and halavai, can I have another nevuah? Moreover, the Guzari kind of pokes fun. He says, the other religions describe all kinds of very descriptive pictures of what paradise looks like. They says, so you ask the poor struggling peasant. Well, these are very exciting descriptions, right? So would you like them to replace your hard life with those descriptions? Or would you like another 1,000 years of your tough life? And most of them will say, I'll take another 1,000 years of my tough life. And not, you know, they're not ready to rush there yet. He says, but that's why the Torah did not set it up such that you have to wait for after death. That's part of the tragedy of the Churban. That situation where it's just a matter of faith, you have to wait till after death to really experience what that means. So Hashem gave you a recipe, keeping the Torah to its fullest, and you were able to connect to it to all kinds of different levels. So once a person experienced Nevuah, there was no more fear of death. He knew exactly where he was going, and he wanted to get back there. Here, it turned into the opposite problem. You have to have an intellectual understanding of the fact that it's kedai for you to be here longer, because then you can achieve more and enhance it even more. But there was just that sense of, when will I be able to have that experience again? And that's just Nevuah, which is the highest level. But we have to appreciate how this defined Ashras HaShchina, when there was an open Shechina in Klal Yisrael, this defined all of material life. And that's really the pshat in those different promises of the brachas. We've given a few different mishalim. But like, let's say, for example, like Chazal tell us in time of the Beis HaMikdash, and this is the Bayis Sheni, which did not have the full vitality of the Bayis Rishon, didn't have the same level of Ashras HaShchina. But Chazal tell us that in the time of the Bayis Sheni, wheat berries grew to the size of kidneys. Kidney is 10 centimeters, something like that, right? Approximately. So wheat berries, each wheat grew to this size. That was the great bracha of the time of the Beis HaMikdash. You see the descriptions of the sweetness of the fruit. So I ask you, right? You have one of the great Amoraim is sitting doing Tikkun Chatzos, and he's weeping. He wants to get back to that state. So what's the pshat? Is the pshat that, you know, he's sitting in Spain, he's sitting in Bavel, he tasted a pomegranate, and he said, ah, this is not a pomegranate. And he sat down and he wept, right? He wept for, I want those old pomegranates back. Is that the pshat? That we're longing for the much better tasting figs? Without bugs, by the way. And, or, right, you're told that, yeah, the wheat berries are this big. So that turns you on and you say, wow, imagine that. Today, you know, a wheat berry looks like, you know, barley, right? It's basically the same idea of the barley, like this big, before you cook them. So you say, listen, I'm going to tempt you to want the Beis HaMikdash back. Today, a bowl of cholent, a good 400 barleys, right? Time of the Beis HaMikdash, 4 will be a whole plate of cholent. That's wow, I want that, right? These are symptoms. It's great to have great fruit. It's great to be victorious in all our wars. It's great not to have illness, but that's not the essence of what's going on. Those are all symptoms of what's going on. I'll tell you what is, just to try to connect a little bit to what is the pshat in the wheat being the size of kidneys. Pshat is that you have a fellow who has a wheat field, okay? And he is struggling with a certain midah. He's struggling with a certain midah, and he's not doing well with it. And that year, his wheat is shvach. Okay? And there's a message there. And he's out there looking at his wheat field, and he's looking a little down. And the Navi from two houses down walks by. And like the Navi, you know, looks at his wheat field and looks at him and goes, you know. And he gets the message, right? He gets the message. And the next year, he really works hard on that Bida. And he really works hard. He understands that Hashem is sending him messages there. This was a gentle little punch, right? He really works hard on that Bida. And then he goes and he plants his field again. I'm not familiar with the agricultural processes. I'm just talking in layman's terms, okay? He plants the field and he sees that the speed at which the wheat is growing is supernatural. And then the wheat berries actually start sprouting, however it works, it starts sprouting on the, okay? This year they rose to the size of, they grew to the size, back, they're back to what they were, normal wheat berries. But he comes out the next day and they're five times as big. And he comes back the next day and then they're five times bigger. What's going on here? Right, so Vait, I ask you, this person, what's he feeling now? Great! Five wheat berries to a challenge? Is that what he's feeling now? Or is he feeling the unbelievable thrill of Hashem involving himself in his life in a hands-on kind of way? This defined life when we had the full extent of Asher HaTzah Shechinah. And it was the same with the victories. It wasn't that, oh, great, you don't have to worry. It's certainly very good not to have to worry about enemies. But if when there's a great enemy facing you, and you go out in the days of Devaira, you look in the Mefarshim there, when Sisera was threatening Klal Yisrael, I'm just drawing on one example, right? What happened? There was some 10,000, they went out against the strongest army in the world. You realize in the time of the Shoftim, there wasn't an organized army. A lot of different aspects of those tkufas that we don't appreciate enough. But in the time of the Shoftim, the Jewish people didn't have an organized government or an organized army. People look at it superficially and they say, oh, those are backwards times until they got together and put together a kingdom. But you realize that to be backwards and not have a government or an army, that can work for 50 years. By that time, the country is in shambles. Okay? This was a system that worked successfully for 400 years, which means it was the other way around. The Jewish people lived with the reality of Hashem hu malkechem. That's what Shmuel said when they found the Israelite, right? Hashem was the government, and the people obeyed the law by force of their Yirah Shamayim. That was the government, Yirah Shamayim, right? And Hashem was also the government in terms of responsibility for the military. There was no organized army. So I'm just drawing on one example. You see throughout the periods of the Shoftim, just hold on and finish the point. You see throughout the periods of the Shoftim how when different things came up, note that they had to put together an army. Like Gideon put together an army. What happens with Devaira is that she puts together, she and Barak ben Avinayim put together 10,000 people to go fight Sisera, who's the strongest general in the world. And if you look in the Psukim there, in the Shiraz Devaira and the Mefarshim there, what weapons did they come with? Because the demons were like a Seifrin who came armed with their pens. And what happened? Basically, they came out to war. Came out. The two armies are facing each other. And the enemy just starts dropping. That's the Hamam. This was a phenomenon that existed in the days of the Shoftim, when we lived with that reality of Hashem u'Malkechem. The continuation of the Bayis Rishayim was already in the days of the king. That was also a superlative level, but it was already a bit of a different level. The reality of Hashem u'Malkechem, you went out to war. And as you went out to war, as you approached, you saw them starting to drop. And what you had to do was follow and pick up the loot. This was a lot more than we don't have to worry about enemies. It was about, Hashem says, here, we're going to meet and then I'm going to take care of the bad guys. Question, what were you going to ask?
So we daven because of the sorrows that we hope will get go away when Mashiach comes and the base of Mikdash is restored. But couldn't it be that we're all going to be held to a higher level and the sorrows are just going to be more like
that is an educated question. I'm going to repeat the question. I'm going to repeat the question. This is a very serious question. And this was the, call it the struggle, the dilemma that the Jew always had. The question was, but first I just want to round out the point. Let's appreciate the fact that the Olam Hazeh that we live in today is not the Olam Hazeh that Hashem intended for us. Hashem intended for us in Olam Hazeh, where He, in Olam Hazeh, not waiting for Olam Haba, is so intimately involved in our life that we experience Him in a way that, as much as any of us has experienced the vitality, the richness of Ruchnius, it is the way the Guzari puts it, it's the experience of a dead bone versus a live body, in terms of the thrilling, rich experience of having the Shekhinah in your life, in your home, around you. It's mamish living with the warmth of a parent, of a child living protected by his father, by his parents, cared for by his parents. And all of the descriptions of the material prosperity are really just symptoms. It's the results of that. It's like a child who can describe how great it is to live in a home where he's cared for by parents, because there's heating in the home and he has a comfortable bed with a blanket, and there are meals three times a day. And those are great things, but those are just offshoots of a reality of a child living in his parents' care. And the warmth of that reality is something that can't really be described in words. And that's why it isn't. But the Kuzari is telling us that these descriptions of your enemies falling before you and of all of your cattle just being so perfectly healthy and the material prosperity, etc., and Nevuah, topping it all off, are all symptoms of the experience of living in Hashem's embrace. Now here's the question. The question that's being raised is, but as we said before, that holds us up to a very high standard. That holds us up to a very high standard. And who knows, do we want that? Or are we gonna bring ourselves to a place where we're being held to things that might be too much for us, and they'll just bring more tzaras on us? So we have to say that, let's approach the answer to this question from two angles. Angle number one is, we want to make a statement to Hashem saying, Hashem, we want to be close with you, even if that puts a lot on us, because the first thing that we want, the most important thing to us in our lives is you. And we want you. We want that relationship with you. We want that closeness with you. And here, Rabbi Isaac Sherman makes an amazing point when the Mamash addresses that point. But this I will say, that this was the challenge. This is the challenge of being born. Being born places very great demands on you with high stake consequences. And Chazal tell us that looking at it from a human perspective, you would say, it's not worth the risk. Not worth the risk. But you know what Hashem says? Hashem says, what I have in mind for you, what I'm envisioning for you, is so great that I'm going to put you into it even if you don't want that risk. And this was the struggle. This was a mice of the struggle of the Jews in the time of the Meraglim also. Right? We're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to go into Eretz Yisrael where we see how any slight failing, so it wasn't the Midbar, any slight failing, boom, brings a massive punishment. Now, we're moving into Eretz Yisrael where we thought, this was the struggle there. We thought that, okay, the Midbar, we're living so close to Hashem that the level of expectation is so great that any slight failing brings, you know, a terrible calamity. We'll get to Eretz Yisrael, and there we'll have our feet back on solid ground. Like, we'll be back in normal existence, right? And then what were they told? No. If we're talking about great, mighty nations, you don't have a natural chance against them. What was the significance of that? The significance of that is that you're going right back into the same exact reality, that unless you're going to be operating at a very high level, you're just going to be blasted by tzaras. That scared them. That was part of what was behind the uprising at that time. We don't want to go. So let's just go back to Mitzrayim. It wasn't comfortable there, but our feet were on the ground. We were living on terra firma, is that the term, right? But Hashem said, I'm sorry, if so, then you are not of the mentality of an Am Hashem. I have to wait for the next door. The door who grew up in the Midbar and only knows this reality and is ready to move into Eretz Yisrael, to maintain that mentality of you have to live up to the standards. You have to have Hashem holding you up. Don't rely on nature. But Hashem says this is the greatest privilege that can be given to a Jewish, to a human being. This is the greatest privilege that can be given to any being. The Malachim weren't given that privilege. The greatest of Hashem's creation is the neshama of the Jew, and the Jew is given that privilege to hold yourself up to a very, very high standard in order to really be my closest circle. That's the challenge. And what we want to be telling Hashem now is, Hashem, we do want that. We understand that the stakes are high, but we want that privilege of living close to you. Will we manage it or not? Here, Rabbi Isaac Sher says something that very liberating. Like, I don't know if we would have the right to say this. Rabbi Isaac Sher proves this, and he says, tell Hashem, we're going to rely on you to give us the kaychas to be able to do it. We want it. We're not making cheshbainus. We want to be close with you. This is the most meaningful thing that could possibly be in existence. Will we be able to live up for it? Hashem, if we're close with you and we want to do it, we trust that you'll give us the kaychas. That's really the answer to the question.
But don't we have to work? You know, it's very easy. Oh. If I understood you correctly, you know, I'm leaving it up to you.
Oh, okay. That we can't dispense with that question. Yashar koyach. We'll get to that. Yes.
Go ahead. You know, it's going to be more than a darn mitzvah. It's going to be the life of other rishon lefois. There will be. It's ours. We won't have those challenges. The mitzvah was challenges because of any affair they might choose. You know, they'll be punished right away. But they're not going to have Yetzirah when Mashiach comes. So, it's not going to be that Yetzirah. It'll be just, really, it's going to be better than Dharma.
I'm not sure what will be. Here we're getting into the questions of exactly what will be at which point. I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. It's likely that there will be a number of stages until we actually get there. There's Mashiach, there's Tchias HaMesim, and the Rambam tells us, don't try to figure out exactly how it's going to work. But it's likely that there will be a period where there still will be work, right? And even when we talk about shechting the Yetzirah, that might mean that it will be different types of challenges. We won't have the challenges that we're facing in our time because things will be much clearer. But then, just give one example. Of the way Avigdor Miller puts it. He says, on the higher levels, the challenge is, are you going to be operating on high or at even higher? That's something that can be relevant, even when the Yetzirah that we know today will be slaughtered. So let's not, we won't assume so quickly that there won't be avodah then, certainly not immediately. The Rambam paskens that, at least that the initial tkufa of Bias Mashiach will be Olam Kimin Hobe Noyeg, meaning that it will still be the same general frame of reference that we know, just all operating at that supernatural level that we've been describing, but not that there will be no avodah.
So
that's not so simple. It's likely that there will be Bechira at a higher level.
That's Olam
Haba. But Mashiach is not necessarily synonymous with Olam Haba. Not necessarily. Again, I'm not going to get into exactly, because we don't know exactly what will be when, but not necessarily. I still want to get back to your question. I want to end with it. We're a bit past the time. I forgot, 1:15, I was going to make my statement that feel free to leave. I'm going to continue up until 1:30, but what I really want to get to is your question, but I'm just going to stop now, please, if you need to leave, feel comfortable getting up and leaving. And then after that, we'll continue Bli Neder until 1:30, but we've finished our official shiur. Hagutavach. Okay, before we get to your outstanding question, there was another question from the back.
What I'm failing to understand is that they had such sublime pleasure in living at the time of the Beis HaMikdash and experiencing the Nisim. How could they not want to hold a higher standard and start doing a Beis?
Yeah. So that's also a classic question. We have two questions that we have to address now, and both of these questions are at the heart of the issue. How could the people of those times have slipped if they were living in that sublime reality? And then the next question, which is really at the heart of as the question of what's incumbent on us, is, oh, so making it sound very easy, that it's just about saying, Hashem, we want it. Okay. So, first of all, in terms of how could they have failed? So, we have to appreciate that the koyach of Bechira is a fundamental part of our operating. And when there are higher opportunities, there are higher tests. So first of all, the level that they were asked to live up to, within the Dara Midbar, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, demanded more energies than we might think we have. There's talk about this in different Sfarim, about how the truth is that in terms of what Hashem was making out of people, it was more than what we would consider realistic. And that was because only Hashem really knows the greatness of a human being. We don't. And only Hashem really knows what he can make out of each of us. And when we hear Hashem's program for us, we might think impossible. But Hashem says, you submit yourself to my chinuch, follow my program, and take my messages, which will include some patches. You can reach much higher places than you would dream possible. But they had to be working very hard, without much slack. And the koyach that went against it, the koyach of Avodah Zarah, today we don't understand the temptation of Avodah Zarah. But it was an all-encompassing temptation, particularly for people who are holding on a higher spiritual level. And there was also the Tzahara of dabbling just a little while staying from. We can't imagine that today. A person is very, very from. And medaktik in mitzvahs, but he struggles with Avodah Zarah and he fails here and there. But that was the reality of those times. But the bottom line answer is that yes, Hashem gives, will make Bechira be relevant. Now I want to get to your question and end with this, because this is really very much at the heart of the issue as far as we go. We've been talking about how the call of the Bein HaMetzarim is that longing. It's this point of telling Hashem, what we want more than anything else is to be back with you, and we'll take whatever it takes. And we trust you to help give us the koichas. So does it end there? Does that mean, okay, we don't have to worry about our own hard work? There's no question that a part of the package is that we want to be showing Hashem. There's always the two layers. This is true for any part of the year. There's the layer of the longing, and then there's the layer of the all-around improvement, so that we can tell Hashem, look, right now we don't have that special Siyata Dishmaya, but we are of our own accord working to operate on the highest level so that we are as presentable as we can be for you. So there's no question that it comes along with two parts. There's the longing part, and there is the part of the understanding that we bear the responsibility of showing Hashem that we can operate on as high a standard as we can put ourselves to, that we can do that. Show Hashem, kiviyachol, a sampling of the types of efforts that we would be putting in. And yes, that is a part and parcel of it. It's a part and parcel. There's no getting around that. Each of the different parts of the year have their own message, their own feelings that we're meant to be feeling, but they all do boil back down to that we want to be operating on the highest level we can in order to really be ra'oy l'kach.
We do say at the end of Echa, Hashibein Hashem Alecha v'Hashuva, you start the process.
Oh, where's Kasha?
My grandma.
Shukoyach. Yeah, we're going both directions at the same time. We are trying to show Hashem that we're going to be living up to the highest standard. And that is also part of the answer to the question that you raised. What's expected of us? What's expected of us is that if we can't be at the level of the generation of the Churban who saw it and said, okay, Hashem, we went too far, we want it back, we are being expected to bring out a different type of Boi Chamayim, to be able to come and say to Hashem, we're at the tail end of history. We are so far from the people who actually experienced all that. But you know what we can show you is that coming from that void, we are still managing. This will be a select few. It won't be most people. But we are still managing to bring ourselves to a place where, even though this is the world I know, this is the world I'm familiar with, I want a different world. I want a world of that closeness with you. This is what I am longing for. And on the contrary, this is much greater level of Toi Chamayim than the people who lived back then doing it. People who lived back then, they saw it. Now they appreciate what happened and they want it back. That's one thing. But we can actually achieve something much greater by coming from a place in history where we say, well, in general, we're comfortable with it. We just like a few things fixed up. And we say, no, you know what? From where we are in history, we're reaching out to Hashem and we're saying, we want the closest, we want the highest levels of closeness with you. And that itself is a very, very great schus for all of Klal Yisrael, that we in our position today are capable of doing that. Agud Tevach.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mazel tov to you.
Thank you so much.